Welcome to the Battle Cry Podcast with Convention of States Action President Mark Meckler. You can watch the original live broadcast Sunday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on the Convention of States Facebook and Rumble channels.
Happy Sunday evening, everyone. My name is Mark Meckler. I'm the President of Convention of States Action, and I'm joining you for my favorite Sunday night activity, and that's the Battle Cry. I love this so much because we get to look at all the news that's going on around the country and pick out some very specific stories that I think are important, and I'll give you my slice on it. Also get to answer questions from you guys. That's my very favorite part of the week, really. And this week, we want to start with the Battle Cry call to action, and the call to action this week is vote. No, I mean it, really, vote. We have primaries here in Texas right now, so we're voting in those, but it's not enough for you to just vote. You need to make sure that your friends vote, that your family votes, that everybody you know who thinks like you votes. And some people say, well, it's not really any of my business whether other people vote. Well, if you care about the country, if you care about your city and your county and your state, it most certainly is your business. And sometimes all people need is a little bit of a prod to get out and vote, like folks in your church. You know, it's a small percentage of actual professing Christians that get out and vote in every election, especially in the primary elections. That's true for all of us. So make sure that you get out and vote. My suggestion, my specific call to action, make a list of 10 people who think like you, who share your values, who you think might not vote. Keep that list of 10 on your desk, in your purse, on your iPhone, and then contact them and ask them, have you voted yet? I mean, I actually did that this week. My close friends live just a couple of blocks away. They're getting ready to head out of town. I poked at them by text and I said, hey, make sure you vote early before you leave town. So this is something you can do and you can make a huge difference if you do this. So again, get out and vote. Make sure everybody you know votes. All right, speaking of voting, one of the things we saw this week is Donald Trump got kicked off the ballot in Illinois. What the heck are these judges thinking? Look, we've already seen this case before the United States Supreme Court. SCOTUS has already seen it. They're going to rule on this from a constitutional perspective. I watched those oral arguments. Everything I saw indicated that we are likely to have a 7-2 decision keeping Trump on these ballots. It might even be 9-0. I mean, I saw a lot of great stuff, even from the liberal justices, saying that this was really outrageous for states to try to affect a presidential election by kicking a viable candidate off the ballot. By viable, I mean the candidate selected by a particular party to be on that ballot. So Trump is on the ballot in these places, Illinois, Colorado, and others that are trying to kick him off. We've already seen the oral arguments before the Supreme Court. If you haven't had a chance to watch them, it's really an interesting set of oral arguments, and you can find those online at SCOTUS's website. But go back, watch them. I think you'll see what I see, which is the vast majority of the justices are on board. I think the ones who might have not been fully on board with keeping Trump on the ballot because of their partisanship, they may even get muscled to being on board. It's important to have a 9-0 decision here, at the very least a 7-2 decision, so that the country remains united on the fact that Donald Trump belongs on the ballot. Now, whether people want to vote for him or not, that's a whole different thing, right? I don't expect the left and all these crazy Democrats to necessarily vote for him, but we should want candidates on the ballot as opposed to states just making random decisions to kick them off the ballot. That leads to just chaos and anarchy, in my opinion. So Illinois, what are they doing this right now? I think it's ridiculous and stupid. I think they know better. I think it's just a partisan move. I don't think it had to do with their actual legal analysis. We're seeing a lot of that from federal courts right now, and this fits in with that pattern with leftist federal courts not actually following the law or the Constitution, but making political statements. So we'll get that decision probably sometime fairly soon from the Supreme Court. I'm looking forward to hopefully a 9-0 decision keeping Trump on the ballots. Look, as far as keeping somebody around and on the ballots, we got big news this week, and that is Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell has announced he's stepping down. Now, I don't think this surprises anybody in the sense that Mitch McConnell is clearly not all there anymore. You've seen the footage. I've seen the footage. Him literally just completely freezing up, like just blank stare, no words in the middle of press conferences. Something's going on with Mitch, and it's time for him to go. And it's time for him to retire. It's time for somebody else to replace him as the leader of the Republicans in the Senate. Hopefully that'll be a Senate majority and he'll end up being the majority leader, whoever the next leader is. But I want to talk a little bit about how this works and what McConnell's real legacy is. Look, when we choose a leader, and by we, I don't mean we as in the people, because we have no choice about it, but when senators choose their leader, or the Republicans in the House chooses a speaker, this is not, and I repeat, not, and shouldn't be, a purity test. And what I mean by that is, from my perspective as a hardcore conservative, it's not the most conservative person who should be the speaker, or can be the speaker, or will be the speaker, or in this case, the minority or majority leader in the Senate. Why do I say that? Because this has to be a person who is willing to make the sausage. This has to be a person who understands what it means to compromise, to do the messy, dirty, sometimes scummy stuff of getting stuff through the Congress. Now, that being said, do I want somebody who aligns with my values? Yeah, of course I do. Do I want somebody who's more conservative rather than more liberal? Of course I want that. But really, the purists are not the people who are going to be able to lead, because you can't lead your whole caucus entirely in that direction. You've got to be willing to compromise and make some of these backroom deals that all of us find appalling and disgusting. It's why I'm not a politician. Maybe it's why you're not a politician. It's why I'm not running for office, because I don't like that kind of stuff. But somebody has to do that. That's called making the sausage. You probably heard that. Nobody wants to see how sausage is made, but it's still got to get made. And we have a lot to thank Mitch McConnell for. I have to say, look, he is one of the most Machiavellian and strong leaders in the United States Senate that we've ever seen. Now, again, doesn't mean I like his politics. Doesn't mean you have to like his politics. But he knew how to control his caucus, and he knew how to get things done. And the thing that I want to give Mitch credit for as he retires is for the United States Supreme Court. Now, certainly some of the credit goes to Donald Trump, but much of the credit goes to Mitch McConnell. Stuff I didn't think he would do. He did, and he held strong. You might recall that originally the Democrats removed the idea of requiring 60 votes, right, in order to get something to the floor. And they call that cloture. They removed that for the confirmation of judicial nominees. And when they did that, Mitch McConnell warned them, you will reap what you sow, and maybe sooner than you think. And so they used this to confirm some federal court judges. And then it came time for all the stuff around confirmation of Supreme Court judges. And first and foremost, Merrick Garland being elevated to the Supreme Court. So President Obama wanted to elevate Merrick Garland right before he left office. And McConnell just said, nope, I don't think so. Not going to allow that to happen. Not going to allow that to get to a vote. He was the majority leader at the time, and he refused to let that get to a vote. I think that's absolutely incredible. And then you look at what happened with the Supreme Court justices nominated by Donald Trump, and kudos and credit to Donald Trump for that. You might like him, you might not like him, but he was able to put three on the Supreme Court. Certainly, those three are partially responsible for the overturning of Roe versus Wade with the Dobbs decision, right? And so, if you want to give credit, you have to give credit to Mitch McConnell for the way he handled all of that stuff procedurally, because we wouldn't have the Supreme Court we have today, which is certainly more conservative than it was, if it were not for Mitch McConnell. So kudos to Mitch McConnell for what he was good at. Some things that he didn't do that I really don't like. There's a long list of those things, but you're not going to get the purity test leader of the United States Senate. Remember, it takes a majority of the caucus to elect their leader. And so, you know, let's say that, I don't know how many Republicans are going to get. Let's say they end up with 52, right? That means it's going to take 27. And there are not 27 radically conservative Republican senators. They're not going to be. And so you're going to end up with somebody who's a bit more moderate. And what I hope is it's somebody that really knows the process, the procedure, the rules, strategy, and somebody who's willing to make the sausage. And that's, again, not something I want to do, not something I'd be willing to do. I'd be more of a purist. And the purists generally don't run things in the legislature. Their job is to be pure and push everybody in their direction. So that's what's going to go on with the McConnell announcement. I think it's exciting. It's time for a new era. It's time for the older folks to step aside and the younger folks to step up. We'll see who that's going to be. I have some preferences. Maybe we'll talk about that next week, because that's not going to happen right away. Turning away from politics for a minute, although unfortunately does have a political element, I'm going to turn to the death of Lachlan Riley. And Lachlan Riley, of course, the student at Augusta University, that's University of Georgia, and she was killed by an illegal immigrant, an illegal alien, a criminal, criminal before he killed her, with a criminal record, and who was in this country criminally, who does not belong here, and who President Joe Biden, Secretary Mayorkas, allowed into this country, who was paroled on his own recognizance, who committed other crimes, and who ultimately, one morning last week, decided to kill Locke and Riley, apparently a very bright light, as every human life is, but a real shining star in the nursing program there at Augusta University, University of Georgia. And this is kind of a litmus test for how the media views this stuff. First of all, Locke and Riley was white. And so, of course, that doesn't register very much on the scale on the left wing. I think there's a hierarchical scale based on skin color. You know, darker you are, the more the left wing media cares about you. Number two, she was murdered by an illegal immigrant criminal thug, somebody who should have never been in this country. Somebody's in this country because Joe Biden let him in this country. Secretary Mayorkas let him in this country. The Democrats in Congress let him in this country. That's why he was here, and that's how he got his hands on Locke and Riley, and that's how he killed her. It's on them. The blood is not even indirectly, I would argue, directly on their hands. Their decision specifically and intentionally allowed this man to be in the country, and now an American citizen is dead, and a young life has been snuffed out because of the things they chose to do. And then the question becomes, how do we look at this as a country? And there really is a litmus test. The left is mostly ignoring this, mostly ignoring it. When they do cover it, they bury the lead behind fake headlines. I saw things like, oh, how dangerous it is for women to be out jogging alone. And by the way, there's some truth in that. You need to be very careful, very, very aware of your circumstances. I highly recommend being armed if you're going to be out jogging alone, male or female. But the main thing is, she was killed by an illegal immigrant, and none of the headlines on the left will say that ever under any circumstances. None of the reporters will say that. They might talk about how Republicans are pouncing on this issue. We're only pouncing because it's reality. And we saw this week at the University of Georgia, literally thousands upon thousands of people came out in a memorial to her and another student that died. I didn't see how the other student died, but thousands came out for this memorial. We see action in the Georgia legislature. We see strong statements and action by Governor Kemp in Georgia. And we hear the silence of the left-stream media. We hear the silence of Democrat politicians for the most part on this. Not true entirely, but for the most part. When they mention it, they don't mention that she was killed by an illegal alien who entered this country based on the policies of the left. And so this is the world we live in right now, where an evil, heinous act like this can take place, where the left would blame if there was a gun involved, they would blame the gun, but when there's an illegal immigrant involved, they won't blame the illegal immigrant. And you should pay attention to this, and we should call it out everywhere for what it is, and we should not forget her name, and we should make everybody on the left say her name. We were made to, quote unquote, say the name of George Floyd, a man who was a criminal, a drug addict, a thug, who had done a lot of horrible things in his life, who we as a society turned into an icon. We as a society were made to say his name. I don't hear the left wing doing the same thing about young Ms. Riley, and I think we need to force them to do so. We should not back down on this, and she should not have died in vain. Part of this involves what I would call the attack on free speech, right? They don't want us to be able to have an arena in which we can talk about the Locke and Rileys of the world. She's not alone, by the way. Literally, thousands and thousands of Americans have died at the hands of illegal aliens. We have between 80 and 100,000 deaths from fentanyl every year. That's illegal drug trade from Mexico, from South America, fostered by the Chinese. We're not supposed to talk about that stuff. And the left-wing media tries to silence us on all of that stuff, be it Google or Facebook or Instagram, all kind of one in the same, whoever it is, TikTok, they try to silence that kind of stuff. And the left wing is trying to silence this stuff. There is a broad attack in the United States of America going on right now around the idea of free speech. And this week on MSNBC, you heard somebody on there talking about, we have a dangerous obsession with free speech in the United States of America. And it's dangerous because it allows, according to this person, the spread of misinformation and disinformation. Now, what are misinformation and disinformation, right? Well, reality, what the left means when they say misinformation or disinformation is they mean anything they don't like, anything that you would say that they don't like. when you say that Trump did not foment an insurrection, they don't like that. They would call that misinformation or disinformation. When you say that J6 prisoners are sitting in prison being deprived of their due process rights, they would call that misinformation and disinformation. When you said masks don't do anything, they called that misinformation and disinformation, and they suppressed it. When you said, and now when you say that the COVID vaccinations hurt people, that they were improperly tested, that they did damage, that they're doing damage, the left considers that misinformation and disinformation. Even all of, everything I just said now, proven true facts. And so when you hear the left talking about misinformation or disinformation, what they mean is they don't want you to be able to say, hear, see, or read anything that disagrees with their prescribed narrative. That's what they really mean. They want you to not be able to know any of this stuff. And ultimately, they don't want you to be able to think it, let alone say it or read it or see it or repeat it. And that's their agenda. Their agenda is anti-free speech. It's anti the First Amendment. It's anti the First Amendment on free speech. It's also anti the First Amendment on your freedom to publicly practice your religion, not just in church, not just in worship, but the public practice of your religion, of your faith, which should involve everything in your life. They are against those things because the left has turned totalitarian in the United States of America. They throw around the word fascist, and the word fascist, the word totalitarian, those words, they are actually describing what the left is doing today in America. So they want to control that. They don't want you to be able to say those things. They don't want you to be able to know those things. Your job, push back against that. Your job, speak the truth. Your job, go out and research and find the truth for yourself online. Go to the sources you trust. I trust Ben Shapiro. I watch him constantly. Matt Walsh, Michael Knowles, all the Daily Wire folks. I use Instapundit as one of my daily sources of information. I use Daily Caller as one of my daily sources of information. These are places that I believe that you can trust, and you can judge that against whatever other information you can get online. I don't always agree with everything that's said on every one of those things, but I don't think there's intentionally misleading stuff on any of those sites. So protect your right to free speech. You know, free speech gets wound up in our elections, obviously, the ability to speak about what you believe, what you think, which candidate is your candidate, et cetera. And that leads us to our weekly or almost weekly feature on presidential politics, who's hot and who's not. And this week, I have to say on the who's hot list, really only one presidential candidate on the who's hot list, only one. That's Donald Trump. Donald Trump is doing something that I didn't necessarily believe that he would be able to do. And this isn't because I doubted Trump. It's because I doubted our justice system. It looks like he is one by one picking off all of these cases against him, or at the very least delaying them until after the election. You have the Jack Smith documents case down in Florida. That case now, there's a presidential immunity claim on that. And the Supreme Court has agreed to take that up. So there's been a stay in place on that case that's delayed that case, much to the chagrin of Jack Smith, the prosecutor in that. And it looks like now, in my opinion, from understanding briefing schedules and how these things play out, it is highly unlikely that that case is going to proceed before the election. And I know that frustrates Jack Smith. I know it frustrates the left, but it really is how the justice system should operate. The DOJ has a policy in place that they're not supposed to bring cases that affect elections. Obviously, they haven't gone along with that guidance in their own regulations, but it's going to put it pretty close to the election, if not after. And that's a very, very good thing. You guys have been watching the Fulton County case with Fannie Willis and Wade Miller, the starstruck lovers who apparently were absconding with money, going on vacations, et cetera, et cetera. That case looks like it's getting blown out of the water. It looks like Fannie Willis is going to lose her, not only her political career, but likely her law license, and hopefully end up in jail. Same may be true for Wade Miller. Maybe for once, the bad guys will get what they deserve. It is in Georgia, after all. Even though it's in Fulton County, the Georgia legislature is moving forward with an investigation. They are likely to impeach Fannie Willis. Looks like there might be crimes she's committed, including campaign finance crimes, money laundering crimes. So she's in a lot of trouble. That case looks like it's going away, certainly not going to trial if it ever goes to trial before November. So Trump's kind of pulling an inside straight here. It's amazing how these cases are dropping one by one. you got these big financial verdicts against him. They're being appealed right now. I think those are going to be stayed for a while. I think he is ultimately going to end up with the field cleared, allowing him to run in the election without worrying about these cases for a while. I'm not saying they'll all be fully resolved by November, but I think some of them will be, and some of them will just be stayed pending appeal. So that makes Trump hot right now. The second thing that makes Trump hot right now is if you look at the polling, and this is really important, the national polling, Trump's ahead, but more importantly, look at the swing state polling, right? Look at the polling in places like Georgia. Look at the polling in places like Michigan and places like Pennsylvania and places like Wisconsin, places like Nevada, places like Arizona. Trump is pretty much up in all of them. And up relatively significantly, say 2 to 6 points in all of them. There's one poll that I saw that looked like he was maybe neck and neck in Wisconsin. And these are by two different pollsters. This is in the Real Clear Politics average polling. It's not looking good for Joe Biden. And I think part of this is about Trump, but I think part of it is also how much people really don't like Joe Biden. Joe Biden is seen as corrupt. I think that's being proven. Hunter Biden testified under oath this week, and sounds like there's going to be some real bombshells in there, but we all know that. Hunter Biden is the bag man for Joe Biden and the Biden family crime syndicate. All that's coming out. They think he's corrupt. Number two, people look at Joe Biden. They watch him stumble up and down the stairs. They listen to him mumble through every time he speaks publicly, usually making terrible gaffes, can't even read off a teleprompter, and they know this man is not fit to be president. We see the numbers in youth voters, and youth voters are very close between Joe Biden and Donald Trump, shifting towards Donald Trump. We see the same thing in Black voters, the same thing in Hispanic voters. Joe Biden's in real trouble. Trump's hot. Biden's not. On the Republican side, you look at Nikki Haley, and I don't know why you would look at Nikki Haley. Nikki Haley lost her own state by 20-plus points. She lost Michigan by a much larger margin. I think it was 40-plus points. She's not going to win anywhere. She's losing everywhere. It's time for Nikki Haley to drop out of the race. I find this just appalling that she would stay in the race. I don't know what she thinks she's doing. Maybe she thinks she'll collect a few delegates along the way in the states that aren't winner take all. And she thinks that something happens to Trump, she'll be in. She's not going to be in. Trump's going to be the nominee. So Trump hot, Haley not, Biden not. I guess the last you have to look at is Kennedy Jr. And Kennedy Jr. is looking better. His poll numbers continue to rise a little bit. He's qualifying for the ballots in certain places. Interestingly, when you look at the head-to-heads and then you include Kennedy, Trump gets better. So that means Kennedy's taken more away from the Democrat base than he is from the Republican or independent base. So that bodes well for Trump as well. So look, I don't think people who support Trump should get cocky yet, but I think Trump is hot and the others are not. So what's up with COS? Convention of States is moving in Idaho and Iowa right now, most aggressively in those two states. And I would say it's neck and neck. You got a bunch of, I would argue, crazy, illogical people arguing against us, entire left united against us. And then you've got some fringe nuts on the right who are aligning with Planned Parenthood and La Raza and MoveOn.org and Hillary Clinton against us. Like, would you ever be with those people, if you're on the right, they're aligning with Planned Parenthood against Convention of States. And so I think, look, if you're in Iowa, if you're in Idaho, if you know anybody who is, you got to tell them to reach out to their legislators right now and tell them to support the COS resolution. This is really important. And I want to do a little parsing here. Sometimes I get asked about efforts to pass term limits amendment on Congress alone. There's an organization out there trying to do that. And I want to be really clear about that. It's a bad idea. It's a terrible, horrible, really bad idea. Here's why. If you impose term limits on Congress and you don't impose term limits on the deep state, on staffers and bureaucrats, then staffers and bureaucrats will run everything forever, even more than they already do. And the U.S. Term Limits Initiative to pass just term limits on Congress will do exactly that. If you like term limits, then you should be in favor of Convention of States application because it has term limits built into it, not just for Congress, but staffers, bureaucrats, and the judiciary as well, all available to limit their terms. So I would say don't support U.S. term limits. Don't support term limits alone. Support Convention of States. There's also an effort out there by an organization called the Balanced Budget Amendment. And they're trying to propose a balanced budget amendment alone. Again, look, I'm a supporter of the idea of some kind of balanced budget amendment, but without being able to do things like impose restrictions on unfunded mandates, impose tax restrictions, impose spending restrictions. The BBA alone cannot do that. Those can be done under the third prong of the COS application, limiting the scope, power, and jurisdiction of the federal government. If you just impose a balanced budget amendment, they're going to tax you to death. That's what they're going to do. Or they're going to impose unfunded mandates on the states and say the states have to run these programs. That's already constitutional. We have to do away with that. And the BBA alone doesn't allow you to do it. One last thing, the BBA is attempting to litigate this to force Congress to call a convention, claiming that in 1979, somehow they already reached 34. This is ridiculous. We're going to be releasing a whole memo on that. This is legally specious. It's a bad idea. It's giving Congress more discretion than they're allowed to have here. And this is something we absolutely shouldn't do. And I'm personally very opposed to that, and COS is opposed to it. So if you hear about efforts to litigate this, the answer is we shouldn't do that. They're specious. They're ridiculous. If you hear about a BBA alone, you should be opposed to that, a balanced budget amendment. If you hear about term limits alone, you should be opposed to those. Those are things that will do bad things, directly, obviously bad things, and we need to stop all of those things. All right, I'm going to go to Q&A. Let's see, in the Q&A, I've got, this is called the Ask Mark Anything segment. You can send your Q&A questions to battlecry@cosaction.com. Rochelle Caffey says, I don't know when you plan to actually put the COS in action. Rochelle, it's in action. In other words, 19 of 34 states have already passed. We got to get to that 34 number, but we're in action. And our activists are not only working in state legislatures to call a convention of states, but they're actually working to pass other things under what we call our F3 initiative. That's federalism, freedom, and fundamental rights. And what our folks are doing is picking other pieces of legislation, election integrity, ballot integrity, pro-life, pro-gun, anything you can think of that would fall under federalism, freedom, or fundamental rights. And they're working for those things in the states right now and helping to pass them. Really good stuff going on. Also, aligning with other organizations like the Heritage Foundation, helping them pass their priority legislation, aligning with organizations like Alliance Defending Freedom, helping them to pass parental rights legislation. So COS, it's in action. Teresa Helderson out of Minnesota says, what has CS done to partner with truckers to promote COS? Teresa, I've reached out. I've just really not been able to get a lot of response out of the trucking world. There's a lot of truckers who support us. For example, I reached out to Trucker Ray, who was the guy that said that truckers weren't going to deliver to New York anymore, never heard back. So if you know a way for us to get more broadly involved with truckers, I'd be really happy to do that. Kelly Walsh asks, how would delegates be selected from each state if this passes and we get 34 states on board? Kelly, each state will decide how to select its own delegates. Each state gets one vote, but they can select as many delegates as they want, and they can choose them however they want. A lot of states are passing what they call delegate selection acts, which say how they're going to do it. Maybe two from the House, two from the Senate, and one by the governor, or however they decide they want to do it. But that's up to each state in true federalist fashion. Mark Pagano from Ohio said, I've heard you mention that when there's a convention of states, the only role Congress has is to name the time and place. Not trusting Congress, could they say that the convention will convene on January 10, 2050 in Nome, Alaska? Mark, yes, they could. Theoretically could do that. And I don't trust Congress either. But the thing is that the states retain the sovereign right to get together for any purpose they want, any time they want. And so, as I like to say, we don't need no stinking Congress. So if Congress said, as you say, January 10th, 2050 in Nome, Alaska, the states could get together and say, yeah, sorry, we're going to do it in Columbus, Ohio on the 15th of January next year. The states have this right. Richard C. Bernhardt asks, what's the single most important thing or issue in the Convention of States would address? I'm going to say that broadly, and then I'll give some specifics, Richard. I think for me, broadly, it's the balance of power between the states and the federal government. In other words, it's answering the question, who decides? Should the federal government decide, bureaucrats, even elected officials, or should you personally decide, or you in your city or community or your state decide? I answer that question that we the people decide, and that by that I mean you in your community, you and your doctor together deciding your medical care, et cetera. So that's kind of the broad way of looking at it. If you're asking me what my favorite amendment would be, man, I would probably, there's a couple. I'd like to repeal the 17th Amendment, which allows us to directly elect our United States senators. Used to be that the states appointed their senators, the state legislature. I think that was a better system. The House was meant to be the representative of the people. The Senate represented the states as an entity, and that would prevent the federal government from encroaching on the states' rights. So I'd like to repeal that. I don't necessarily think that's very likely, but that's something that would be in kind of in my fantasy book. And second would be to limit the application or the expansion of the Commerce Clause by the United States Supreme Court. Commerce Clause was supposed to give the federal government the power to regulate interstate commerce. What they meant by that was the shipment of goods between states. Today, the Commerce Clause has been interpreted very broadly to mean that the federal government could regulate pretty much anything. And so we need to limit that back down. So those are two very specific things I would like to do. Before we close out today, I want to remind you, Wednesday night, March 6th at 8 p.m., this is COS at Home, and we're going to have Representative Chip Roy from Texas. I think one of the best reps in the United States Congress, a guy who represents our values, a longtime friend of mine, longtime friend of COS. So join us March 6th at 8 p.m. Go to conventionofstates.com/@home, conventionofstates.com/@home to register. Don't forget, get out and vote and make sure everybody you know that believes like you gets out and vote. God bless you guys. We'll see you next week on The Battle Cry.
This has been the podcast version of The Battle Cry with Mark Meckler. Visit conventionofstates.com/pod to learn more. Thank you for listening.